You're listening to Live and Local. It's your connection to local performances. Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Kelly, the usual host of this show. On the program today, a little bit of a whirlwind tour of events going on in our listening area. Coming up, I'll be talking with Richard Rossi, who's Director of Choral and Orchestral Activities at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston. Richard's going to be involved in two concerts coming up. The choral group's performing this coming Sunday afternoon, and the orchestra and guests on Sunday the 27th. So we'll be hearing a bit about that. And also later on, Mike Compton, who is a fine mandolin player, considered to be one of the more in-demand such players in and around Nashville, is coming to our area for a couple of, a couple of performances and one radio show. He'll be in Bloomington Normal for a couple of events and then in Urbana a week from now. And I'll be talking with him later on the show. But first, we have sort of a local girl who has made good and is coming back to town. Her name, Kristen Stewart. She is in a touring production of Disney's Beauty and the Beast, which will be at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts tomorrow for one show only. Here's the song she gets to sing in the show, among others.
Past your bedtime. Good night, love.
You probably recognize that as the title track from, or the title song, I should really say, from Disney's Beauty and the Beast. It's the Broadway musical that adapts the Academy Award-winning animated film, and it is coming to the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts Wednesday for one performance at 7:30, this particular touring production. And that song is sung by the character Mrs. Potts, who plays the teapot in the Enchanted Castle, where the Beast resides, and eventually so does Belle, the beauty. And Mrs. Potts in this production is being played by a young woman named Kristen Stewart, who is actually a graduate of Illinois Wesleyan University in Bloomington. And I should say, for those who just got a little more excited than perhaps they should, no offense to my guest, this is not the Kristen Stewart of Twilight fame and other films as well. But she is my guest here on Live and Local. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I imagine you get that a lot in some form or another.
I get that almost every day.
And are you able to use it to your advantage in some way, or does it that just not work?
You know, I'm not really sure yet. It certainly has become an interesting part of my life, and certainly because I am also a performer, I get that quite a bit. So we'll see if it ever becomes to my advantage.
Well, tell us a little about how you got where you are. I have just a little bit of information on you, namely some of the shows you've been involved in, but what did you do at Wesleyan? Were you a theater major?
I was. I received a BFA in music theater from kind of a combination of the music school and the School of Theater Arts, and I graduated in 2003 and made the big trip to New York City. And have been very fortunate to work quite a bit and gone on many different tours and traveled the states and had a lovely, lovely go of it.
Well, tell me a little bit about it, how this process works. I'm always curious. I imagine that a lot of our listeners are curious. When you say you went to New York, I assume that was with the usual notion that I'm going to go see if I can make it on Broadway, and probably your share of odd jobs in the process.
I actually am kind of unique in that I've never actually been a waiter, so that's a common that's certainly one of those typical jobs to get you from show to show. But I kind of found this unique little touring circuit and have really gotten to do that. The one odd job that I did continue to go back through to when I was in New York City auditioning was actually working at the TKTS booth in Times Square and talking to people about what was on Broadway and handing out flyers and, you know, standing in the middle of Times Square every day, which was, you know, a whole new experience from where I had come from. So that was my one little odd job that would kind of feed me between shows.
Have you done shows on Broadway?
I have not yet, and I say yet with absolute hope. But that is certainly the goal. That is certainly the goal someday. But in the meantime, I live in New York City, and I have an apartment there, and audition when I need to, when I'm looking at a few lean months, and hopefully, and it has worked so far, knock on wood, get the next show, and then travel out and around typically the States, although we do some in Canada. Also, with some of the shows, we've traveled abroad, which is always an amazing treat. I've been to Japan and Malaysia and China with shows, so it's certainly a unique way to earn a living, and it's been a ride.
So when somebody auditions in New York for a show, for example, Beauty and the Beast. Mm-hmm. Did you audition for a touring show? Did you audition for Broadway production and then?
Yeah, the Broadway production closed a few years ago. I was just about to say exactly which year, but then I paused. I want to say it was 2008 when it closed, and it's been doing the national tour circuit ever since to audiences absolutely everywhere. It's an amazing show that, you know, is interesting to young and old, so it's really been well-received by a lot of audiences. But I go to an audition based on what is ultimately printed in a trade paper, and that was back in April, I guess, that I went to an audition and then had a few callbacks and received a call fairly soon thereafter that I was cast in it, and then we started rehearsals a few months later at the end of August, and we opened in Nashville on September 24th. So really in the world of our show, we're still pretty early on, so it's still just getting started, and we're getting rolling and getting accustomed to all the new people that surround us in our lives and the cast and the crew and the musicians, and that's kind of a very quick rundown of how that timeline has gone for me this year.
I read that this particular tour, this new touring production, is actually the responsibility of the folks who originally created the Broadway production.
It is. The director and choreographer, Rob Roth and Matt West, are still very actively engaged and up to date with the casting and the rehearsing. And it's amazing how long they have been working with this show. It opened in 93 on Broadway. I mean, it's been going for 20 years now. So it has had an unbelievable life both here and abroad, and is still very much taken care of by the original people who first created it.
Tell me a little bit about what it takes to be Mrs. Potts, physically and artistically, because, of course, I haven't seen, of course, the costumes for this particular production, but I assume they're as elaborate as usual.
They are. To be Mrs. Potts, it's delightful. She's so kind and warm, and is very much the mother to almost everyone on that stage, and has a unique plight in that she is the only one that really is hoping this enchantment breaks for someone else because she has Chip that she, you know, so desperately wants to see turn back into a boy. So it's interesting to have that color with a character that she's really fighting for someone else, whereas everyone else, you know, of course, they love and care about everybody, but it's a you know, internal plight a little bit more. So she's a delight to play on stage. And, you know, the costume, I kind of have a spout arm that gets pretty sore, I suppose.
It gets what?
It gets a little sore. Gets a little sore because, you know, I'm a teapot. So, one, I don't get to switch my spout from side to side. So that is an element that along with an unbelievably beautiful, sweet costume, is the part that physicalizes Mrs. Pot.
So in other words, you have to have your arms in this teapot position?
I do.
Sort of like that song, you know, I'm a teapot, short and stout.
I'm a little teapot.
You have to do it for hours.
Yes, I do. I do. But it's a joy. It's a joy. And I've got one really strong arm.
There are, of course, a number of songs that feature Mrs. Potts. We played the most famous, and it is her solo. And I got to music direct this show, I think, 7 years ago, and I just remember every time that song came up, partly by virtue, of course, of the person who sang it, the way she delivered it, but I always found it by far the most moving song in the show. But you also get to participate in some of the, you know, the bigger numbers. There's one that is not perhaps the best known from the show called Human Again, which I wanted to play a bit of. Tell me who else is and what are the other characters involved in this song?
Human Again involves all the enchanted objects in the castle. So it's us kind of collectively coming together and imagining what it would be like should we ever get to be human again. And what it will, you know, the dreams that we still have should it break. So it includes Cogsworth, the clock, and Lumiere, the candlestick, and Babette, and Madame de la Grande Bouche, and napkins, and gargoyles, and forks, and knives. So it involves all of those people just dreaming of the day that hopefully their lives will return to normal.
Oui, my friends, the day we have waited for may be at hand.
Oh, if only that were true, Lumiere.
Ah, human again.
Human again.
Yes, think what that means. I'll be cooking again, be good-looking again, with a mademoiselle on each arm, when I'm human again.
Human Again, the name of that song from Disney's Beauty and the Beast, which will be in Bloomington for one performance tomorrow night. My guest on this portion of Live and Local is Kristen Stewart in the role of Mrs. Potts, originally from Iowa, and got her bachelor's degree in theater at Illinois Wesleyan. So she's kind of a local girl. Does it mean something to you especially to be coming back to this town in a role like this?
It's thrilling. I've had the pleasure to travel around a lot and go to a lot of different cities and theaters, but I have never played Bloomington. So when it appeared on the route, I was very excited.
You got, I'm sure, good training at Illinois Wesleyan. Once you,
I did.
In your case, you've got your degree, you went to New York, and of course you're doing all these auditions. How does one keep training, assuming that you do that in some form?
You do it in all sorts of forms. I still take voice lessons every once in a while. I'll take a class in the city. I mean, New York City is ripe with opportunity to learn and to perform and just be in a community that fosters creativity. So I think there's always something to do, always something you can learn. I mean, books and talking to people. And, I mean, acting is one of my favorite things that a professor told me at Illinois Wesleyan once was that acting was reacting. That's what it really was intended to do. So to be an active participant is to react to not only the environment around you, but to the people around you. And that's certainly the goal of stage work as well, so that it is still something that's truly happening in that moment. You know, that's the unique element of theater versus film. It is the only time that this exact thing is happening, to be presented to this one particular audience. So, you know, I think that's certainly something I've brought from Illinois Wesleyan and enjoy continuing to incorporate.
Well, Kristen Stewart is playing the role of Mrs. Potts in the current tour of Disney's Beauty and the Beast, which is coming to the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts Wednesday at 7:30. Kristen, thanks very much for joining us on Live and Local.
Thank you so much for having me.
And here is one of the real showstoppers from Beauty and the Beast. It is called Be Our Guest.
Be our guest, be our guest. Put our service to the test. Tie your napkin round your neck, Shelly, and we provide the rest. Soup du jour, hot or dry, we only live to serve. Try the gray stuff.
Oh, it's delicious.
Don't believe me? Ask the dishes. They can sing, they can dance. After all, miss, this is France, and the dinner here is never second best. Go on and fill your menu, take a glass, and then you'll be our guest. We are guest, be our guest. Beef ragu, cheese souffle, pie and pudding en flambé. We'll prepare and serve with flair a culinary cabaret. You're alone and you're scared, but the banquet's all prepared. No one's gloomy or complaining while the flat is entertaining.
Oh,
I do tricks with my fellow candlesticks.
And it's all in perfect taste that you can bet. Come on and lift your glass, you want your own free pass. We'll be our guest.
If you're stressed, it's fun dining, we suggest.
Be our guest, be our guest, be our guest.
Music from Disney's Beauty and the Beast coming to Bloomington tomorrow evening. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our program is made possible in part by 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign. For over 25 years, 10,000 Villages has provided income to artisans in more than 30 developing countries by marketing their handicrafts and telling their stories in North America. Stay tuned for a conversation with Richard Rossi of Eastern Illinois University's music department. He's conducting choral and orchestral concerts coming up in the next two Sundays. But first, I'll be talking with mandolin virtuoso Mike Compton. A tune called Hallie's Hornpipe, played by Mike Compton on the mandolin from his CD from a couple years ago called Rotten Taters. Mike Compton is going to be playing in our area a few times coming up shortly on Sunday evening at 7 o'clock. He'll be at the Coffee Hound in Bloomington. He's also going to be playing on WGLT in Normal on one of their programs there. And then on Monday next week, he'll be at the Rose Bowl in Urbana at 8 o'clock. And he's actually going to be playing for us live on Live and Local that day. So we'll get to hear a lot more of him. But I wanted to give you a little bit of a preview and let you know about those Normal and Bloomington dates. Mike Compton, my guest this portion of Live and Local. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks, Kevin.
I usually think of the mandolin as a collaborative instrument, so it was kind of interesting to hear this CD where it's all solo, you know, either just playing or you playing and singing. Is that a reasonable sense of it that I have?
Yeah, sir. That's I'm probably doing more of that these days than any other thing. It was started out basically as a necessity because I didn't have as much work on the books as I'd like, and it's come to be about probably at least a third, if not half, of what I'm doing.
Is solo?
Yes, sir.
Do you think that the mandolin has had a transformation in its role in various bands over the time that you've been playing?
Yeah, at this point in time, I think it's a lot more out front. There's some incredible technicians that are playing mandolins these days. It's really showing what mandolins can do. It seems like it used to be more considered a classical instrument for a long, long time, I guess for probably most of its public life.
Classical meaning literally classical music?
Yes, sir. And I mean, there are Stradivarius-built mandolins. I mean, it's pretty much been a classical music oriented for most of the time until the string band people got a hold of it. And I think before men played mandolins in country music, it was considered to be a ladies' instrument and stayed pretty close to the parlor. And I guess around the end of the 1800s, it started to becoming extremely popular, which I guess sort of set the groundwork for some of the major corporations that built mandolins to start making a lot of money. outfitting everybody and chasing the new fanaticism with mandolins. So these days, you can hear people playing like South American choral music is real popular. You get groups like the Punch Brothers that play a little bit of everything. Now there's a train in the background. So it's come a long way from being a parlor instrument and being soft, playing soft tones, to really get out and screaming. You can hear it in rock and roll. You can hear it electrified. I've seen, although not heard, I've seen people with heavy metal hair and plugged in, and you know I can only imagine what that might sound like. So it's really came out into the forefront as being very versatile, and people do pretty much any kind of music you can imagine on them.
Have you done any dabbling in the classical realm yourself?
No, sir. I don't know much of that repertoire. I do enjoy hearing it. There used to be the Nashville area used to have the Nashville Mandolin Ensemble, and they played some classical. I remember going to a show here in town years back. They played everything from bop to rock, and they did. They were Bill Monroe. There were Bach pieces, and then there were. I believe they even played the Star Trek theme song.
You've been involved in some film soundtracks, and I was just like, "Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?" Down from the Mountain, Cold Mountain. I'm kind of curious. Do you think that the mandolin and this kind of music has sort of made those kind of films scores possible, or is it the other way around that those kind of film scores have helped to bring this music back a little bit into the forefront for at least some listeners?
Yeah, I think probably the opportunity to use the music in the film is probably what brought it more to the forefront. I mean, mandolins have been around, that we were talking about. They've been around for quite a long time. they fall from popularity ever so often. I think just having the sound of it and seeing them in the movies that have that big of a cult following sure bring them to the forefront and help. I think the year that that movie came out, I saw lots of new pairs of overalls. So I mean, it's influenced the fashion trends, and it's bound to have influenced the people that were wearing overalls and playing, going out to buy mandolins. I remember hearing people talk quite some time ago about how much more popular the banjo became after the movie Bonnie and Clyde came out, because they heard the Flatt and Scruggs playing Foggy Mountain Breakdown on there. So yeah, I think it's probably the media at this point that made it more popular, and not the other way around. See, just the exposure to so many more people.
Well, we're looking forward to having you in our area, Mike Compton.
Well,
Mike Compton will be on WGLT's program. I'm pretty sure it's their program called Acousticity Sunday evening. And he's going to be playing Sunday at 7 p.m. at the Coffee Hound in Bloomington. And then he'll be in Urbana Monday night, next Monday, at the Rose Bowl for an 8 o'clock show. And he's going to be coming back to us for a live stint in our studio with some of with a little bit of a jam session next Monday during the 4 o'clock hour. And I'm really looking forward to meeting you in person instead of on the phone.
Yes, sir. Well, it'll be good to shake hands and look you in the eye.
Well, I appreciate you joining us today, and best of luck with your travels, and we'll see you in about a week.
Well, thanks, Kevin. I'm looking forward to it.
No doubt you know what that music came from, the score to the Hitchcock film Psycho. Bernard Herrmann wrote the music, and that's music that'll show up on a concert coming up a couple of Sundays from now that's called Fright Night. It features the Eastern Symphony Orchestra at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston, although that music will be played by their special guests, the Alton High School String Orchestra, which Laura Plummer will be conducting. That'll be somewhere the centerpiece of the concert, which overall will be led by Richard Rossi, who's the director of orchestral and choral activities at the university. Richard will also be conducting a chunk of a concert that is a little closer to today, this coming Sunday on the 20th, that will feature Eastern's Concert Choir, String Quartet, and Mixed Chorus, a program that they call every year Cathedrals, Castles, and Colonies. Richard Rossi is on the phone with me from Charleston right now. Thanks for joining us on Live and Local.
Hi, Kevin. Good to be here.
So these titles, I noticed, not only for your groups, but other groups at Eastern like to continue from year to year. Is that just a longstanding tradition?
Yeah. It's interesting that you bring that up, because I was just saying that to someone yesterday. There's certain titles I like to use each year because I think it's important for the patron to become familiar with certain things and have expectation each year. Even though the music changes, I think sort of having a similar title on most of the programs is sort of alluring to a listener because it reminds them, oh, that's that Cathedral's concert coming. Fright Night is just a great title. I mean, this Halloween concert has turned into a wonderful annual event because of the number of activities we do with the little kids as well. So I think it's a good drawing card sometimes to have certain consistency in titles.
So Cathedrals, Castles, Colonies, the cathedral part, I assume, refers to music that would have originally been sung in the cathedrals and sometimes still is.
Correct.
What about the Castles and Colonies part?
Well, I think the castles, let me see if we have any castles going on here. We do have colonies because I'm dealing, that deals with anything with America. So where that's the way to do it was to bridge the European to the American. Matter of fact, when I first came up with the title, I had cathedrals and castles on it. I said, I need another word to get it going. And it was, matter of fact, Gary Jensen, who will be playing the organ for this concert for us, said, how about colonies? I went, yes, that's it. So matter of fact, he is the one. And Hugh Blair, I was mentioning to you, the Magnificat we're doing, is a tradition from the English cathedral. So as you know from working at the church all those years, you have the decan-cant, the split in the choir. We're doing that, and it's really an absolutely wonderful effect in Dvorak Concert Hall. So.
And just to explain slightly more for listeners, decan-cant, actually, what is it? As they say in the English church, decani and cantori, or something like that, refers to this choir on that side, the other choir on the other side, basically split choir, creates a nice antiphonal effect.
Right, exactly, and that's exactly what it does. And it does provide, we just checked acoustically to see if it was going to work, and it's great because the organ's coming right from behind their heads, so it keeps them together. And, well, the deck sort of refers to the side of the choir that was sitting on the dean's side, who was, you know, in charge of the cathedral. And the cant side, it refers to those who were sitting on the cantor side. So you have that split antiphonal effect, and we go into eight parts at times, you know, where the cant will start singing, and then the deck will join, and then they're together. And it's just an absolutely phenomenal effect with the organ.
And that will be sung by the concert choir, which you're leading.
Correct.
Who's Hugh Blair? He's not a composer I've heard of.
Yeah, well, he's an English cathedral composer. Matter of fact, he was at Worcester around 1887. And then until, I think he was only there for a couple of years. So it was during that time that he wrote this. Yeah.
Well, let's give a listen. Music by Hugh Blair. This is the start of it, Magnificat. They'll also be doing the Nunc Dimittis in B minor. Gary Jensen will play the organ for the performance at Eastern Illinois University. Richard Rossi will conduct. The concert is this coming Sunday at 4 o'clock in the Dvorak Concert Hall of the Dowden of Fine Arts Center. Wonderful hall, by the way. You're listening to Live and Local.
Thank you.
Music by Hugh Blair, Magnificat. It'll be paired with his Nunc Dimittis in a performance by the Eastern Illinois University Concert Choir Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock, a concert that also includes the Eastern String Quartet. How did they manage to get onto a choral program, Richard Rossi?
As you may have noticed over the years, seeing some of my programs, I like to have eclectic programming. And the other reason, we wanted to break up the program just a little bit to give a little bit of rest to some of the singers, because concert choir also sings with the mixed chorus.
Mm.
So we wanted to give them a little bit of rest, and also they had to get into position to come in with the other ensemble. So I don't like a lot of, you know, halts in a concert. I like to sort of keep it moving, and I thought it would be nice to have a string quartet, and they'll be off stage right, ready to go. And as soon as we're done, they'll do it. So it's sort of in order to give, like, what you might say, an interlude to the program.
Mm-hmm. And they're going to be playing a movement from one of Mozart's string quartets, so that's always a nice thing to have. And then the mixed chorus. So the mixed chorus consists of the concert choir plus a bunch of other singers.
Correct. A lot of non-majors and even some music majors as well who didn't get into concert choir.
This part of the program looks like it mostly has to do with the colonies of the title, Cathedrals, Castles, and Colonies.
Correct. As a matter of fact, April Lee, who is the director, conductor, was focusing on a lot of the colonies when she saw the repertoire that I was picking.
And we have, do we have your arrangement here of the tune Wondrous Love?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I wrote that many years ago. And I completely forgot that I had it, and we were trying to also have a men's piece and a women's piece in order to give some contrast and rest to the voice in the program. And so my grad student will be conducting that as well.
And is this a take on the familiar folk tune?
Yes, it is. It's exactly the Southern Harmony.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And an adaptation by Richard Robert Rossi here on Live and Local. Richard Rossi's arrangement of the tune Wondrous Love. Also, it's his performance with a choir he used to lead, many years ago now, Richard, wasn't it? And what's the name of the abbey in Pittsburgh, outside Pittsburgh?
St. Vincent Archabbey in La Trobe. It's about 50 miles southeast of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and that's a tune that will be sung by the University Mixed Chorus at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston Sunday afternoon. The concert's at 4 o'clock. The Eastern Symphony Orchestra is going to present a concert a week later on the Sunday the 27th at 6 p.m., both concerts at the Dowden Fine Arts Center on the campus in Charleston. And we heard earlier that they'll have a special guest in the Alton High School String Orchestra and a costume contest, as is fitting for a program called Fright Night. This is the part of the tradition, I gather, that brings the kids out.
Yes, and we get at least 50 children. And from that, as part of my keeping this program, Fright Night annually, it not only opens itself up to great repertoire for the orchestra, but it's seeing these little ones who come and enjoy and participate, sitting on the stage with the orchestra as well, and experiencing a live orchestra right in front of them and some video works as well. So, and they get to march around with during Star Trek, and we have judges that pick, you know, winners for all the different types of categories for the costumes. But they also all get candy at the end because all the fraternities and sororities provide candy for them trick-or-treating in the lobby after the concert.
Do any of the kids find themselves getting unduly frightened sitting on stage when something like, say, Mars, Bringer of War from Gustav Holst's The Planets
breaks out? Interesting. I thought you might ask that, and I have never had that. And even when we did The Sorcerer's Apprentice, I expected it because we did it with video. No, they were just totally entranced. And I think it's just because of the visual stimulation accompanied by live music right in front of them. It's just so much stimulation. I don't think they have a chance to get scared.
I've mentioned one of the pieces that you guys are going to be playing. What's the rest of the program for the Eastern Orchestra?
Well, we're doing the Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra. We haven't done that in over 7 years. As part of Fright Night, I think it's important for me to also educate the little ones in music. So while it's to bring these children to the concert and, of course, their families, the music is by far not children's music, but music that's really difficult to play and enjoyable and challenging for the orchestra, at the same time entertaining and educational for the children who come. So The Young Person's Guide is a great piece by Britten that helps to introduce them to the orchestra. We're also doing Ride of the Valkyries by Wagner, which is just totally exciting and exhausting, of course, for the strings and winds. And we are also doing Star Trek as the march, and we're doing Mars from Planets. But we are ending with some video footage with some of the movements from John Williams' original score for Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Apprentice, Sorcerer's Stone, excuse me.
Yeah, mixing up a couple of pieces there.
Right, exactly.
And Hedwig's theme, that's the most famous music from Harry Potter.
Yes,
and,
yeah.
With the
Celeste opening.
Yeah, everybody will love that. Well, as always, it's a pleasure to talk to you, Richard. It's going to be should be two wonderful concerts coming up. The choirs this coming Sunday at 4 o'clock, the orchestra on Sunday the 27th at 6 o'clock, and Richard Rossi conducting at least portions of both of those. He's director of orchestral and choral activities at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston. Hope that some of our listeners might have a chance to hear one or both of those concerts. And Richard, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you, Kevin.